Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Well, here we are. What would have been a game recap pod has now become a coaching tenure recap pod. Like, is this, this is happening?
So this has happened in our lifetimes. This is the fourth time.
Frank
Solich.
Billy C.
Fifth time. Yeah. Billy C. Riley. Pliny.
Yeah. Frost.
This is our fifth in
20 years.
20 years.
Yeah.
And 20.
It's crazy. It's now five head coaches, five ADs in 20 years. And there's been so much talk about, like, Nebraska's got to get off this cycle of higher fire. But now Nebraska's back on that cycle. Full disclosure. So it is 3:53 p.m. on Sunday. We had a plan, right? Like, I had a plan. I had the whole game recap all ready to go. And all of a sudden, boom, the news hits. Frost fired. Trev's press conference. You and I just watched Trev's press conference.
Yeah.
And so here's kind of what I want to start with is, like,
throw it all out the window.
I just want everybody to, like, let's give each other some grace.
Yeah.
And just talk it out. Like, how I feel now, or my opinion on something now may be different. That I may be, like, contradicting myself at the end of this podcast. Like, a lot, like, everybody's opinion today should be written in pencil and not pen. Like, it can alter, it can change. I think let's just work our way through how we feel right now, because I don't know. We'll get into what Trev said, but real quick, like, so when the game ends last night, historically bad game, 642 yards given up, most ever by an opponent in Memorial Stadium. Did you, like, when you went to bed, did you think Frost is going to get fired on Sunday?
0%. There, in my mind, I never got to that point in my head. Like, I just assumed there's this, you know,
the October 1 thing
was like, it was hard for me to think, well, we're going to make a decision and be willing to write a $7 million check when we could wait a month and not have to, you know, like, that's a big statement that I did not expect Trev and the administration to be wanting to take. So I was shocked when text started flowing in about noon today, and I went, hold on, what? And so I don't know if I missed something, because I read Mitch Sherman's article last night. He wrote, and he said, it's the end. Like, some of the writers wrote, like, this is the end.
Well,
but, like, I didn't think it was the end yet.
Well,
I,
that's the thing is, I think, if I'm being real honest, now what's hard was we were going to preview this Oklahoma game, and I was like, this is the opportunity to flip it, to change it. Like, he has to win this game to save his job. But I think overall, there's a difference between thinking last night, I thought it was over last night, but that doesn't mean I thought he was going to get fired on Sunday. No. This entire time, I thought, because of that October 1 date and because of some other things, I thought, if there's going to be a change in the middle of the season, it was going to be in the middle of the season.
Yes.
And so before we get to Trev's comments, like, again, give me grace, people. I'm just walking myself through this here. My first thought was, and this is coming from a guy that, like, I wanted it to work with Frost.
Yeah.
My first thought was, why bring Frost back to just fire him three games into the season?
Because he wanted it to work. Like, you don't bring him back.
But he didn't give it a chance. In my opinion, this is what I'm getting at. Like, you could make a case. And in fact, I think I could make the case right now. I don't think he ever gave. Did Trev give this revamp situation a chance for it to work?
Yes.
You think he did?
Because he got to be the coach this offseason. And Trev looked at the schedule, right?
Yeah.
Oklahoma's game four, three games you really should win. We've never had three wins in a row under Frost.
Okay.
You got Whipple, you got Mick, you got the new offensive staff, you got some new players. Like, the offense last night looked decent,
right?
Right. I don't think anybody expected our defense, though, to be that bad. So Trev says, I'm going to give you the start of the season thinking that you might win the first three with a lot of juice going into Oklahoma. And then if you beat Oklahoma, it's all turned around. So, like, the decision wasn't made. And you could tell by what Trev said.
Right.
I take him for at his word. Like, he did not expect this not to work. He thought it was going
to
work.
I'm not trying to say that he was disingenuous with what he was trying to do. I guess for me, I'm sitting here and I'm just playing devil's advocate of, like, why? Because the big question is, I think it might have been the first question he got asked was, like, why now? Like, why make this decision now? And one of the first things I thought when the decision came down, it's not that I don't agree with it. You know, like, I think at this point, whatever it is, 16-31, four straight losing seasons, staring down the barrel of another losing season. You just had one of the worst, if not the worst, home losses in program history. Yep. Like, I think there's obviously a pretty easy case to be made that, like, you needed to part ways with Frost. I guess for me, like, if you were going to, it's just interesting to me to make all these changes, bring him back for a year five, and basically say, you got three games to prove to me that this brand new situation is working. And if it's not, you're done.
So, like I said, I was on board with giving him the opportunity. Me too. And, you know, we've been supporters of, like, hey, like, let's take it. Right. And I think to give Trev credit, though, he gave him that extra year and a half to sort of, like, every opportunity to make it work. Right. But right now, the only reason, really, now that you look at it, to get through most of the year, if it's more about money, and Trev's saying it's not really just about money. It's right. about, I think he's hearing the fans.
Yeah.
And I think I mentioned something about this last week, but, like, the hearts and minds of Husker Nation, like, if more people want to see him go than less, like, that's a part of this decision. And I think that finally flipped, where if you pulled Husker Nation, more people didn't have confidence in Frost specifically. That played the part of him saying, like, we're going to write the check. Even though it's, like, it's not a good financial decision for Trev, it became like, I don't think the fans can take
the collateral damage done to the fan base or to the hearts and the minds, as you say, like, maybe it's too much if you would have continued this thing. And yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you know, I think one of the things with last night felt different. Like, there always was a way, and we've done it for 4 years. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We've done these game recap pods. We've done it for 4 years where there always was a way to somewhat explain the loss, or sometimes the loss was just so inexplicable that was the reason, right? Yeah. There always was this, like, well, you know, they shot themselves in the foot, they beat themselves, yada, yada, yada. Last night felt like, you know, we talked about, like, how the way the Frost era has gone has made me rethink what I know about football, because it seems like Nebraska, like, we more often than not, you walk away and go, how did they lose that game?
Yeah.
Last night was the first game to me that it felt like an ass kicking. Like, Southern got came in here and kicked Nebraska's ass. There's no explaining that away. There's no, well, if this and if
we
that.
We played excellent on offense in a lot of ways to stay in the game.
Right.
That's how bad they whomped us, like, our defense. Like, and I think that was, I always said, like, if you play good defense and you're tough, guys like Trev, Nebraska fans stick by you longer. Like, but when you don't play good defense, there is something to that, that it's like, it's the pride. The pride then goes, like, it falls away for us.
Right.
And so to me, like, we're always better off, like, giving more chances when it's like the offense just does one little thing and can't do it, but we're playing good defense. The black shirts look tough. Like, when the black shirts are giving up 600 yards and, like, they're this, you know, Sun Belt team is just picking on us, essentially. Yeah. That is where people, I think, just go,
well,
it's unacceptable.
Yeah, I think I think what Trev wanted more than anything was it for it to be obvious, it being the decision.
Yes.
And I think, and I will defend Trev in this regard, I don't know if it was totally obvious at the end of last year. Even though they went 3-9, I don't know if it was totally obvious. And here's the way, here's probably the way to say that Trev made the right decision. If Trev would have made the decision to fire Frost at the end of last year, there would have been, I think, a pretty good amount of people that wouldn't have liked the decision.
Yes.
Now, granted, this decision is only 4 or 5 hours old. I'm yet to talk to or see any tweet or read anything or infer anything or hear anything from anyone that disagrees with this decision.
Because a lot has happened in 3 weeks.
Yes.
Nick, in 3 weeks, the hearts and minds have changed. Like the hanger on, let's say it's you're pulling the Husker
undecided
Nation.
Voters.
The undecided voters right. that were, let's say 60% to 70% right. said, we want to stick with right. Frost. It was probably after the end of last year, most people said, let's learn from our mistakes. We don't fire coaches until we absolutely have given them enough time. And it wasn't until basically Northwestern, North Dakota, and then the final straw is Georgia Southern, where I think those kind of people in the middle, they've gone to like, this isn't working. And so the majority of Husker Nation, I don't think was on Keep Frost right. bandwagon.
That's what's hard. And we do this thing where we separate the team, the defense, the offense. Like, it's like, well, it's like we're assessing two things. It's like, it's a team. What's hard is like, I do think there is the offense better than it was last year? I think it is.
They look better to
they
me.
They look better. But that doesn't matter because you're looking at the totality of the team. And the thing Trev has said all the time, and I even dubbed this comment early on in Frost's tenure, where I just want to see progress through the process.
Yeah.
And Trev has kind of said as much, where it's like, we just got to see some incremental progress. And I think the thing of where it changed the hearts and the minds of people is, not only did you not see any progress in these first three games, you saw regression.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm not so sure this team isn't the worst iteration of Frost's tenure here so far. Like, if you take this team so far and match them up against any team in the Frost era,
yeah.
I don't know. This defense is like historically bad right now.
We're playing really bad football on defense right now.
It's bad. So I guess I told you I was going to talk it out. Like, as much as I don't understand the decision, I do understand the decision. And that's what, like, if you just zoom out,
I think the timing is surprising. Though. It's very surprising.
I think everybody's got this October 1 date in their head where it was like, nothing's happening until October 1. Nothing's happening until October 1. Nothing's happening until October 1. And so you just weren't like, you got caught with your pants down.
But here's why, right? Like, the big deal was like, we restructured his contract yes. for this October 1. Like, the whole buyout thing was for this like situation. Like, if it's not working and October 1 comes, then you save us money.
Right.
And we're 20 days away.
Right.
You know? Like, we're right. 20 days. We're 20 days away. Yeah. Nick. And that's
so
where
I think
I'm
we
like,
thought he was going to go to October 1. You know what I mean? Yeah, like to me, that
October
was like,
one was,
it's almost like an American Idol. And you know, they're like, how you doing? My name's Nick. I'm going to sing Mary Had a Little Lamb. And they're like, all right, go ahead. And you're like, Mary had. And they're like, nope, I'm done. It's a no for me. You're dreadful. You're terrible.
I usually
like,
let you get through Little Lamb.
I usually let you get through at least the first chorus. But you're like, they didn't even let Frost get through the first chorus or the first. Like, so I think that's your point is true. Like, I thought the audition time was till October 1.
I Nick, that's why I was shocked. I was sitting there looking at my phone. I'm shocked.
Right.
I just never crossed my mind that with the October 1, with Oklahoma coming, I think my wife might ask me, like, are they going to? I'm like, no. I mean, they're getting through October and maybe a game or two, like, depending on like what happens with Indiana Rutgers. Like, I kind of had that in my head.
So did I.
And, you know, I was thinking, all right, then it basically is a 4-game audition. Like, if he can win 3 of 4, starting with Oklahoma, or 4 of 4, like, he probably keeps his job. But if he goes 2 and 4, like, then he's done. Like, I kind of had that in my head, but man, I didn't see this. I didn't.
That's what's so hard is like, I didn't see it coming because of the details surrounding the situation. But if you're just looking at the situation for what it is, then it's understandable. If you're just removing everything else and assessing a football coach and a football program, it's completely understandable why you make this decision right
well,
now.
Well, and think about this. Like if this was 3 or 4 years ago, I don't think it happens like this. I think with the new era of early signing day with NIL, time is a big, big factor. So if you get a coach in November, let's say, he can hit the road recruiting for a month and a half. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, salvage the recruits you want, and the ones you lose, you can go find replacements. But the portal is the other part too. Like you can get the coach you want easier. You can get the assistants you want easier, and you can get the portal and the early signing guys.
So there are some benefits.
I mean, I think he mentioned, or I don't know, I saw this somewhere, but like there's a few teams last year that did that, like Texas Tech, USC, like
the guy that beat Nebraska, Clay Helton, got fired two games in last year.
Two games in, and he got ran. So that is a trend that these ADs now, I think it makes sense that they go, look, we get an advantage. If this is going to happen anyway, to Trev, it's worth $7 million for the fans and for the process to get started now. And this is the part that maybe we'll get into a little bit later, is that Mickey Joseph is a candidate, mm-hmm. and Trev said, "I want to give these players a chance." So there's a sense maybe that with Mickey, this is his audition. Mm-hmm. He's got an audition. The players, I think, have responded to him so far. Like, this is his 9-game audition. And I think the more audition you can give somebody, the better chance that they can have with it. So, I mean, I'm going, we just found this out. So I know nothing about what Mickey Joseph's plan is. I know nothing about the situation behind Mickey Joseph. I don't know if they're like, if he's a strong candidate, but Trev admitted they're going to consider him. Yeah, he goes, I'd love to see Mickey like prove himself on this. Yeah. So like they're giving this guy kind of a little bit of a shot, but they're still doing a national search, which means like the best coach they're going to take, but Mickey has a real shot now because he's got more games. So he has more time to sort of build.
Sure. Yeah.
So if he can build something that works and wins some games, that'll be a good audition for him. So I don't know, but I just think, man, there's a lot going on right now.
The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors, and I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. And if you go into Pella's website right now, you look at it, and how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of windows or doors by Pella won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. That's big time stuff right there. And they achieved that in a couple of waves. They got insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. They got types of low E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. They got triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all of that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for window and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella Windows and Doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. Do we want to stick on like the frost and kind of trying to provide perspective on that and the fact that it didn't work, or do we want to go to what Trev had to say?
I think we go with what Trev had to say. I mean, okay, we've been over the frost a lot, so we can get back to, but I think what the Trev press conference, that's the big
thing. Yeah. So it's 4:10 and Trev took the podium at 3:00. So this was an hour, 70 minutes ago. I took just a few notes. Trev started out talking about, you know, there's got to be accountability. A record of 16-31 is not acceptable. He called Frost in at about 11:00 on Sunday morning. I thought it was nice that Trev went down with Frost and gave Frost the opportunity to address the team. Trev addressed the team, and then Mickey Joseph, obviously you've said he's going to be the interim coach, and Mickey was able to address the team. I thought there are a couple things that stood out. He talked about it's going to be a national search. I like how Trev, he was really good in the press conference, like he always is.
Nick, right now, let me tell you one thing. We know we got one person that's the right person for the job. Trev Alberts has been freaking phenomenal. Yeah. Like even that press conference, that's a, such a hard delivery. And he knocked it out of the park.
The right tone.
The right tone.
Because he started thanking Frost, and that's and it was sincere and genuine. But then there also was a matter of fact of like why we're all here.
It's not accountable, right?
He seemed cool too. It wasn't like it was like,
I don't remember. Why?
Steve Simple and Pin.
Does anybody want to work for
me? We're looking for the best candidate. Thank you. Like there was not that.
Yeah. And he was pretty cool up there. And he, this is the part too. Like he was respectful of Frost. Like
that's it. Yeah.
He's like, look, Frost won this. He's a Husker. Like he wanted this more than anybody. He like, I think it's like important that like people don't need, like there's no reason to trash Frost because Frost is a Husker. Like he's one of us and he wanted and as
he
much
wanted
as
every it to Husker. Win. He wanted it. He wanted it to work. Like, it just didn't work.
It's bizarre how it just didn't work.
Right.
And we'll, you know, down the road, I think get into like, you know, maybe some of the reasons why it didn't, as we always do, but like, man, I just think like he's a guy like you don't, there's no reason to trash him because he's done a good job of like representing the university. Like he hasn't, you know, been a jerk or done anything besides be just a good guy and like look after the kids. And so you got to like respect the Frost for what he did and what he was trying to do. But man, it was just like bizarrely just didn't freaking happen.
No. Well, okay. So one thing I liked that Trev did was he got out ahead of things of saying like, okay, over the next, he basically was like, okay, people, over the next couple of months, the rumor mill is going to be crazy. If you hear Trev Alberts reached out to XYZ coach, guess what? It's probably true, but that doesn't mean that I'm necessarily trying to hire XYZ coach, or I've even offered the job to XYZ coach. Yeah. He basically said like, I have my list that I have admired from afar, but I want to try to cast a big net of absorbing as much information as possible so I can make the best decision as possible to hire the next coach, which is just such a smart thing. Like,
see how smart he is, though.
Right. Like, you're going to hear a bunch of rumors. Calm down about it.
But okay? See, this is what happens in these moments because I've, you know, we've seen a few of these, like, you know, they're going to get Houston nut and then, you know, they find out and then, you know, then the people are trying to re-sign Houston. Like, these are the crazy things that happen because it gets very dramatic and he's sort of squashing the drama
right
before people can create the drama. And like that's what you got to do is like, hey, I've seen this dog and pony show happen before. Like we're gonna keep the dogs in the kennels and
kennel up.
Stables
kennel up. Kennel up. By the way, do you remember when which was it, Sam or Cody that got it, you guys got a brand new kennel, your dog growing up? I thought it was Sam, and remember they built the kennel outside. And you and I spent the night and our plan was to sleep in the kennel.
Why do we want to do that?
I mean, you're like 8 and you're like, let's sleep in the kennel. We got in there and we were like, this sucks. You don't remember this?
I don't remember doing that. Oh, yeah.
You know, the kennel, not the one where like the igloo, Dutch was at, the one igloo outside. Yeah.
We wanted to sleep.
We are sleeping in this kennel.
Well, it's not the worst.
When you're little, you're obsessed with like the idea of a fort and all that
forts
stuff.
Forts are cool. If it's some, I mean, I'm thinking it's like the winter. Like, this is a real bad idea.
I don't know what time of year it was, but whatever it was, it lasted about 5 seconds. Okay. Good. Sorry for the tangent there. He was asked a couple of things. I can't believe I got to this. The buyout. We've hinted at it, but one of the first questions he asked was what we're talking about. Hey, the buyout's $15 million. On October 1st, it went down to $7.5 million. Did you guys, you know, negotiate a settlement for the buyout? And Frost said, no negotiated settlement at Nebraska. We honor contracts. The contract was what it was, which means Scott Frost is going to be owed $15 million when, like you said, it's could have been in seven, 20 days. It could have been $7.5 million.
That's such a significant amount of money,
right?
For such a short amount of time to wait. But like you said, it's what Trev indicated is that what's happening is bigger than that money, which is like, for some people are gonna go $7 million. And I would say that's a lot of money, right?
It is a lot of money.
But like, what's the value? Like Nebraska football is worth in this
one
state
home game.
I mean, I'm
do
talking
the math on one home game,
like billions. It's $1 billion industry in our state. So like $7 million is a lot of money in the big scheme of things with finding the right next coach, you know, appeasing the fans that have sort of lost faith. Like, this is this stuff, it might be worth that, right? So, like, it seems kind of crazy when you're just looking at dollars and cents. And that's why I didn't expect it. But the more I thought about it, I'm gonna go, okay, Hearts and Minds, coaching search, giving Mickey and the players every chance.
Well, that's what he said.
Turn this around. Like, that's a, I never thought about it like that, but it's,
because that's what he said. Because I said, why now? And he said, we owe, he said this a lot, we owe it to the players.
Yeah.
To give them, he said, we owe it to the players. I'm paraphrasing, but I kind of was taking notes. But he said, we owe it to the players to give them a different voice, a different vision, and confidence and an opportunity. He kept on saying, we got 9 games left. Yeah. We needed to do something. We needed to inject something new, something different, which is like,
it's understandable.
Like, I suppose
it's what's hard is, like, Frost never seemed like somebody who had lost his team, right? It had seemed like that to me. It never seemed like he'd lost the guys. He was definitely kind of losing some of the fans. It never felt like he lost the guys, but I'll say this, like, when you're not winning, sometimes you do need a different set of eyes. Sometimes you do need a different voice to shake things up. And I'm very curious because Mickey has not spoken yet, right? He has not. But Trev hinted at some structural changes.
He said Mickey was going to that he was going to make some. He was going to be given the, like, full reign to run the program as he see fit. And Trev kind of hinted at these big changes that were going to get made with some structural changes.
So now, he didn't sound like it was changes in person, coaching person.
Because he was asked about that. Has anyone else been let go? And Trev said no, but also said, but Mickey's in charge. So, but I just don't know what that even.
I don't know.
I don't know what that would mean.
I'd be very like practice. So, like, okay, this is how we're going to practice now. Like,
right.
This is how Coach Frost wanted it. This is how he did meetings. This is how I want to do stuff. Like, I want stuff to be like this. We're going to practice longer. We're going to do, you know, like, whatever he, like, Mickey's been around the block. I'll give him that. Like, he's coached a lot of places, played a lot of football. He probably has come from systems that he might feel like he's seen work better or something, right? Because Frost is very, like, it is the Oregon model that, you know, I do love the, like, the Fast Friday thing. But maybe Mickey's like, we don't do that. We do this.
Yeah.
And, or maybe it's like, we don't tackle well. So guess what? We're going to do live tackling every day. Or we're going to do, like, you name it. Like, sometimes a shakeup and a change of, you know, attitude and a change of just like, hey, we're trying some new things. That in itself can be a spark. You just got to change things. And if it works, then all of a sudden you're seeing things work and maybe it builds confidence. So right now we just have lacked confidence to, like, get some momentum and get some wins.
That's why I was a little torn when it first happened. Like, is this the best? Is this move actually give this season the best chance to work? And I was a little torn on that initially, but I think I was so clouded by the elephant in the room being Frost and him saving his job that everything I was thinking about this season was through that prism. Yeah. And maybe when you remove, like, when you remove that cloud and you remove the elephant in the room, maybe there's an argument to be made that everybody else can kind of breathe a little bit. But at the same time, now, the chance that Mickey ends up being the guy is maybe enough of, like, a dangling of a carrot to get everything, keeping it together. But my concern was, like, okay, if a lot of this staff knows they're going to be gone, and because of the transfer portal, if a lot of this, there might be a bunch of dudes right now that are in their dorm, like, after this year, I am gone. And if you already have 1 foot out the door in any way, football's not going to work. So that's why I was like, I'm not sure where I fall.
That here's what's tough is I've been on a team that it fell apart. Bill Callahan's last year was
2007.
That was my last. That's my senior year, and I got hurt towards the end of the season, and I was out. We got smacked by Kansas, and Steve Pearson gets fired, or he got fired after Oklahoma State.
Yep,
and then T.O. comes in, and the writing's on the wall. Like, they all knew, the coaching staff all knew it was over, and you could feel it. I mean, those the great guys, I love them, but like they're humans, they're people, and they are thinking about their families,
yes,
their houses, their life. It's changed. And they knew they were out. They didn't think, hey, I might have a chance to keep my, they were all gone, and they knew it. And the last two games of the year, I mean, it was painful to watch. It was painful to watch coaches that are coaching knowing that they don't have hope. And then some players checked out. And that was disheartening for me because I was, you know, I'm sitting there trying to come back, and it was just really hard to watch that sort of thing happen. It was painful. It really was. So I do think this gives them a chance to, this season at least, to get some excitement and do some
maybe,
things. But
like, maybe I'm not sure. Again, give me grace, people. I'm trying to figure out where I land on these certain things.
I don't
know. I'm not sure. Like, if someone goes, Nick, do you think firing Frost and making Mickey the interim head coach gives this season and this team right now the best chance to have success? I'm not sure where
here's what I would say with that. If this was last year's coaching staff, it gives us a worse chance for sure.
Okay.
Because Frost called the plays. He was the offensive coordinator.
Right.
Right. This year, Frost isn't calling the plays.
Yes.
Whipple is calling the plays, right? And Frost is now the CEO overseer. And I just like, he wasn't necessarily even comfortable with that yet.
I think it was pretty clear he wasn't.
That's what I'm saying. So he seemed very uncomfortable in the new role he was at, but he relinquished his play calling duties, right? So last year would have been a way bigger hurdle to climb with no Frost. This year, because Whipple's in, new offensive staff, like it's still Frost ship in a lot of ways, but it's less so because he didn't have his total grip on the play.
What you're saying is true, and there are two different arguments to be had about this conversation. You're getting at it from the standpoint of like the ins and outs of the daily duties of things. I don't think there's any question that Frost being gone isn't, both coordinators are still in place, like everything, and even Mickey sliding over to be the head coach isn't impacting either coordinator.
Yeah.
So in that way, it's good. My point is that when the head coach is gone and there becomes that uncertainty permeating throughout the locker room and in the coaching offices of, am I going to be here next year?
Yeah.
How does that manifest itself into the team? That's where, so do you see what I'm saying? Like, I get this, the way the coaching staff is structured, Frost being removed doesn't necessarily torpedo the game day operations or even the weekday operations. Where I'm more getting at is the mentality of, does Mike Dawson, Donnie Raiola, Brian Applewhite, to Barrett Rood, to Travis Fisher, to Bill Buescher, all these guys going like, I'm not going to be here next year.
There's no doubt every coach is having the, oh my gosh,
what's going to happen in a couple of months?
But I also listened to Trev and he said, this is an opportunity.
Yes.
Like, he's giving Mickey an opportunity.
So that's right. I think that's what's
so huge. Mickey's got an opportunity. I would say there's a good chance the coaches that are here with Mickey have an opportunity as well. Like, it's sort of an audition for everybody,
right,
to keep their job.
That's why it had to be Trev. I was interested how he would, I figured he'd say, yes, I'm considering Mickey, but I think it was vital that he say that to keep everybody if Trev today, if someone would have said, is Mickey a candidate? He would have said, no, we're going to be taking a national search.
Yeah.
Then I think it would have been a disaster because now everybody's like,
I think Mickey's a great guy for this role in the sense of like, the kids respect Mickey. Like, he's a Husker. Mickey Joseph is a freaking Husker, right? He's a Husker. Like, I remember Mickey Joseph when I was like 6 years old. I was like, that's the one name I remember from like the early 90s teams. Like, Mickey Joseph.
Right.
I knew that name. And so like, Mickey Joseph is a Husker. He's got total cred with the kids, the young kids today. I mean, to come from LSU and winning and being the great recruiter that he is. And he's just like a guy that commands their respect. Like, that part of it is a good starting point to be like, okay, we're going to see what happens here. So I don't know what's going to happen with Mickey. I don't know how he's going to be as a head coach in this role, or if that's fair to be like, this is how we're going to judge you.
Right.
But like, he's getting a chance.
Right.
And it gives the coaches a chance, and it gives the players that are going to maybe, you know, you when you're a locker room, you're not going to be like, ah, this year's over. They're going to be like, well, let's just rally. They're going to try to find a reason to rally, right? Right. Because that's what you do when you're on the team.
Let's hope so. You know?
I hope so. Not everybody
not
does
everybody.
It.
Not
every
some
team
people,
does it.
Right. There's some people that could throw in the towel here. I don't.
Oh, yeah.
I hope that that's not the case.
But I think Mickey's a guy that is it's a smart guy. It's like, it could have been, it was him or Whip.
Yeah.
I think this is the right move right now.
I do too, because even Trev like hinted at it with like Whip. There are a lot of duties that come with being a head coach that Trev kind of said, we don't want Whip thinking about that stuff or dealing with that stuff. We need him to focus on coordinating the offense.
Yeah.
And so,
and Whip's been a head coach. So like that says a lot where it's like Whip's been a head coach. It might've been like since he's been a head coach, he gets, but they said, no, Mickey's the right fit for this moment, for this situation. He's a better fit, and Whip can stick to just call and play. So I don't know if Whip wants to be a head coach again or wants to be a coordinator, but yeah, I think it makes sense for this moment to have Mickey there.
Yes, I agree. But it'll be interesting to see. I think that we just had a good discussion on like, is this going to is it give this season the best chance? Depends, you know, like I could see why you would need an injection of something new and something different. Cause certainly things feel like they're not going in the right direction. I'm just going through what I wrote down during the press conference.
So
salary, be competitive. Well, go ahead. What do you got?
So this is one of the things Trev said that I found, like, I go, oh, I like. So and this is where Trev is hitting out of the park. He says, we need to define what our values are and then hire somebody that fits with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I've ever heard an AD speak like that. We, as the University of Nebraska, need to define this.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells me that maybe we haven't thought it out enough. Like, here's what we stand for. Here's what you got to have to win here. So he's trying to, he knows, I think, some of those things. But like he said, he's trying to find, like, what is it that we need to win here? Besides just defining our values, like, what else do we need to win here specifically? And he's going to reach out to all these different people. And he's going to be like, okay, this is what you got to have to win here.
Right.
Because we clearly, there's something that's been missing. You can win it. Like, if you can win at Iowa State and you can win at Michigan State and you can win at Iowa, you can win here.
Mm-hmm.
You can. We just got to find the thing, the ingredient that we've been missing. Like, whether it's recruiting, whether it's, you know, details, whatever, like, we got to find that thing and bring in somebody that, you know, like, knows what it's about here too.
Right. I mean, cause he even talked about, someone even asked what are expectations for the program moving forward. He was like, he basically said, we don't even, everybody needs to stop focusing on championships, even talking about championships. We need to become process oriented and focus on that before we even think about anything else.
Yeah.
You know, he talked about how the qualities he looks for in a coach. He talked about character. He talked about managing people, culture builders, grinders. He talked about that. He said a lot of good coaches don't have a lot of other hobbies other than what they're doing. Being able to connect with young people, leadership. He talked about how he likes people who hate to lose more than love to win. He then made it clear that he's not talking about Frost here. He's just talking about the qualities that he's looking for in a coach. And he also talked about with like the people that he's going to be looking for. He's not trying to quote win the press conference. Like, it's going to be someone that he thinks fit those, like, who we are, what is the values, and then go from
whether
there.
It's a big name or not a big name, it doesn't matter. Like, it's just got to be the right person. It's got to be the right person that can get us wins. Like, it's got to be about that,
right?
And this is going to be interesting couple months. I mean, and what a first game to start. We get Oklahoma the first game, you know, big, the Fox, you know, big noon game. It's like, oh my God.
I know. There's so much that comes with that I want to get into in a little bit, because it is pretty amazing how this is all the timing of all this stuff.
I don't even want to do tipsy predictions during our wine.
Oh God.
We'll be doing the wine pod later today.
Waiting for us right over here.
Tipsy predictions. I'm like, I don't even want to think about
full disclosure, people, we're recording this. We're going to then record the wine pod. You're going to New York for the whole week. So We're just knocking it all out right now.
You know what? People are going to want more content about this.
Because that's what's hard. It's like, okay, the Georgia Southern game, like this is supposed to be the game recap. Like all, given what has happened, it feels stupid to even recap anything that happened with us.
Maybe later we can talk. I say it was kind of an amazing game.
I guess to me, it's amazing with that game. The final three drives were amazing. Four.
Really. Yeah.
I mean, you have Van Treese, who looked like John Elway and Tom Brady went into a lab and they grew of Kyle Van Treese last night. I mean, he was awesome last night.
He was throwing darts.
But so Van Treese throws an interception when it looks like they're going to go score to seal the game up 38-35. Gets hit as he throws. Then Nebraska has a 15-play, 98-yard drive. In this 98-yard drive, there are two huge reviews that both go Nebraska's way. By the way, I thought they were both the right calls.
They went our way.
So that's what's so you're like, oh my God. As those things are happening, you're going, is Nebraska, after literally having the worst defensive performance maybe ever, it's on the short list.
Yeah.
Are they going to get away with a win? They punch it in, and then John Elway, Tom Brady Jr., Van Treese marches him down the field. They convert a 4th-and-2 on a slant that was a great catch.
Yeah.
I thought Tommy Hill could have intercepted a pass that would have sealed the game.
And Garrett Nelson.
And then a theme throughout the night, it seemed like Nebraska was getting schooled, schemed. The game winner, motion out. It looked like Hausman vacated with him, and you run a QB draw, and Van Treese, who's not really fleet of foot, scores.
Yeah, it was. So I watched from home, and you know, by the way, what happened in the first quarter?
Well, luckily I had FS2, so I was able to watch it.
Oh, FS2 showed it.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, well, I started late because I was on dad duty. So I'm like, tape it.
Oh, so you missed
one of those.
So at what point did you start
the whole first quarter?
Oh, Jesus. It was bad.
It was 14-7 when it came back.
It was
Texas
really bad.
Tech and Houston went
for forever.
Double overtime. Yeah, yeah. And I'm like,
guys, wrap it up.
And so I was just dying when that happened. So I'm trying to catch up and, and I'm phones off. But anyway, I'm like, I'm watching this game close. I'm rewinding. I'm doing the whole thing. And it was like, it became clear, like they're picking on us. Like it wasn't like a chess match. It was like, we know what you're doing. And they kept running the same, handful of plays.
Right.
Like the tunnel screen, the motion out, run the slant. They did that like, five times?
And it looked like they were in, Knight Pride, but it looked like they were picking on Isaac Gifford.
Gifford and Tommy Hill got a workout. And then this is the other thing they did where it's like, we know when you're in, 7 in the box or 8 in the box. And if you got 7 in the box, guess what we're doing? Or 6 in the box, we're running it, and we're going to make that safety there tackle, and we couldn't tackle, right? Or like we just didn't have a sense. Like our defense, what I was really disappointed in is like we didn't have a sense of like, okay, here's what they did. They got us.
Yes.
Let's adjust, and then let's have some instincts to be like, well, guess what? Now is where they're going to try to do it again. Like they were doing the same things. And as a player, I always took pride in like, you can get me once on some trickery, but like you never get me again on it in a game. And they were doing it multiple times. And that's what frustrates me. Like if I'm calling it out, slant.
Yes.
Like Tommy Hill should be thinking, here it comes. Right. Like Tommy should be on that. Like we shouldn't be telling, like that's the instincts that I was really disappointed we didn't sort of like,
well,
get,
One of the things, and I guess we're not getting into the game a little bit, but one of the things, and this is more of a big picture thing, that maybe this is something that Mickey will change. Color me shocked, tongue in cheek. If you never fucking tackle in practice, it stands to reason that you're never going to be good tackling in a game. It seems like they spent the whole spring not tackling. Here comes the spring game. They're not tackling. You hear these things about in fall camp, how they didn't tackle. And, here comes the first three games of the season. This is the worst tackling team maybe I've seen. And this includes like Riley's teams. Yeah. I mean, it is embarrassing watching guys like Buford or Miles Farmer and some of these guys try to come downhill and tackle in in open space. Like the whole thing of like, well, what happened? It's like, oh, I don't know. Maybe if you don't tackle ever in practice, you are not going to tackle in a game. It goes where it's like everybody could have rolled their eyes and stuff. Like it never sat well with me in the spring game of not like, what do you got? Like
here's the thing is like, we tackled well last year, I thought, for the most part. And to me, it's like, sometimes you can get, what's the term where you get complacent?
Well, you get lulled into a false sense of security.
That, like, well, now we're good tacklers, so we don't want injuries. That's a big deal, right? I get it.
Right.
But like, this isn't the same team.
No.
And like, you're not in the NFL yet.
That's what I'm saying. You're not like Aaron Donald.
You know, like, there's a part of me that's like, it's everybody's always so worried about, you know, like, oh, we want to keep them fresh. We want to do like, I get that, but like, you usually got to be good first before I give you the, and like, I trust you. Like,
I agree. You either got to be a pro
good and win. And then we go, all right, guys, we're going to take the pads off this week. Cause you just won four in a row and you were tough. I want to get your bodies back. Like that is a thing. It's like, it's almost earned. Like you kind of got to earn something and we've never earned it.
Totally. I mean,
I guess last year the defense earned it, but the offense didn't earn it.
Right. Yes, I agree. It's, you got to earn it. You got to be really good at it before you get it taken off your plate Monday through Friday or in the spring or whatever. Or
we look to protect you a little bit more because you've proven it this year. Like
who on this defense has proven that they don't need to work on tackling?
Nobody.
And to me, it's just like, well, wow, I'm shocked that then the game comes. They look like a team that haven't tackled in months. They truly look like a team. You maybe missed Buford's first.
I did. I heard about it. Like he was like,
I mean, it would look like it was, I mean, I don't, I mean, it was awful.
And I don't want to pick on the DBs too much, but like that was, man, like I didn't realize how much I miss Williams,
Dismuke, Kim Taylor, Brandt, Dismuke.
Yeah. It's like, once you see the difference, you know, with a bunch of, and I'll give them, they're young guys. Right. I don't want to pick on them.
Yes.
I don't want to like bash anybody because like it's a hard game to play. It's hard,
right?
Like, hey, come down in the open field, make a it's not easy, but like, man, like it's just like we were bad in a lot of ways.
But that's what's so frustrating is like one of the things that I thought was evident right away year one Frost after Mike Riley left was like there was a noticeable, discernible, tangible, visual difference in the physicality and the tackling right away. And it's bizarre to me how all of a sudden that just evaporated overnight.
Well, and last year was the best we've ever been tackling. And so that's what I'm wondering is that, I mean, we're saying they don't practice enough, but is it just like personnel?
Is it a player thing? Maybe,
is the difference in the DBs that extreme? And that would be surprising if that's that big of a drop.
I don't know.
Just from like, they're good. I mean, they were experienced and like pretty good. I mean, Cam Taylor Britt's a second round pick. I mean, so like, okay, like.
And Dismuke and Williams have played a lot of football they got lined up right pre-snap. And those guys, the one thing those guys could do was hit.
They could, yeah. They come down and hit you. And they just knew where to be. And I think they got there in a timely fashion. I think we're late. So like, we look like we're late coming down. And so the holes are bigger. The holes are bigger and we're late. So then these guys are tackling in like.
Right.
10 by 10. It's like, yes. Have fun. You know, it's just hard. It's hard to do.
A couple of things with the defense here, because you're talking about that. One of your former teammates, Brian Wilson.
Yes.
He tweeted last night.
B-Will
tweeted last night. He tweeted. His tweet was, quote, I've been in this defense's shoes in 2007. And what can happen is guys start trying to do everybody's job slides quick. Just got to do your job. As someone that was on the 2017, is that, I read that. I was like, that seems like it makes sense because it seems like there's this, like, everybody's like, oh, what? You got that? No, wait. And then before you know it, no one does any of their jobs.
Oh, Nick, that's actually, that's a great point by Wilson. Cause that's what happens. Like when everybody's not doing it and start like, then you just, it's like it's almost like you panic. Like you panic, like, I don't think this guy's going to stay in his gap. So the next time they run that play, I better just go do it. But then they have something that like it catches you making that sort of like guess.
Right.
I mean, that's
what it seemed like. I shouldn't say it seemed, I'm not saying that wouldn't seem, it seemed like, let me start over. Reading that tweet, it made sense. I'm like, oh, I could see how that would be a thing where like, if you don't trust and you try to do someone else's job, it gets dicey in a hurry.
I would say it was a little less of that from what I saw last night. I think that's what happens if it keeps getting worse.
Yeah. The Nick Bob Podcast is powered by Runza. You know, there are a lot of ways to greet someone. Hey, hi, hello, what's up? Another way is, what's popping? Well, here's the thing. That greeting has taken on a new meaning now because the answer to what's popping is now Runza's new popcorn chicken. That's what's popping. Runza's new popcorn chicken is amazing. Little, bite-sized, delicious all white meat chicken that make any day better immediately. I love them. My wife loves them. My kids cannot get enough. 2-year-old Mac, 6-year-old Mava are constantly wanting to get it popping. Great for a snack, great for a meal. Pair them with the best crinkle fries on planet Earth, and you are set. All I got to say is you need to get out to a Runza location nearest you and get it popping. What's so hard to understand about that? Get it popping with Runza's all-new popcorn chicken. Runza makes it all better. What are you seeing? Take me to the defensive mind. Like, guys, what is
happening? Like, to me, it's like, if you know the defense and you know what your opponent's going to do, you're anticipating, right? You're going, okay, if they're going to this, like, I know I have this, your alignment, your assignment, and you do it quickly.
Right.
And you just execute it. Like, the likelihood that they're going to always gash you it's not big. Like, they can call a good play here or there, and that's where the coordinators need to adjust for you. But like, if you're anticipating and you're quick and everybody's executing, like, every defense has a weakness, but like, it's not giving up 50-yard runs each time. Right. It's like you give a 5-yard out.
Right.
Or like, hey, we're going to give the check down right over the middle for 5 yards. But no defense is just like, well, we can't defend runs and we can't like what they were doing.
Guys, if they take a 75 to the house, we'll shake their hands.
That's that defense's weakness. That 75 to the house.
They might score a touchdown and average 13 yards a carry in the first.
This defense is, we can't stop the run.
Because their numbers at halftime, by the way, were like,
yeah,
jarring. Well, they started 7-for-7 on third down. They only punted one time, and that was in the middle of the third quarter.
I'll say this. I'll give them, those guys are kind of good. Like, their offense, the quarterback and receivers were good. Like,
right.
They weren't like significantly worse than our skilled guys. I was like, gosh, it felt like even.
That's the thing I still struggle with at times. It's like, I watch that game and I'm like, are Georgia Southern's skill guys just as good or better than Nebraska's skill guys? Because they kind of look like they were.
They were.
Is Georgia Southern's defensive backs look just as good as Nebraska's defensive backs?
Probably were. I mean, the difference is we should dominate on the lines.
Yes.
We should. Usually in these situations, if they catch a wave of like good skill guys,
right,
it can even out. But usually in these games, all it takes is time, because our lines will wipe out your lines in a matter of time. You can have a good half.
Right.
You should never beat us over the course of the game. Because it's the
great equalizer is, yes, like, we're just blowing you off the ball, or we're not getting blown off.
My guy that's 6'7", 320 versus your guy that's 6'2", 260, like, in about two quarters, your guy's going to be tired and he's going to be done and he's going to make mistakes. That's what happens with big teams, good teams versus like the smaller, you know, the smaller school teams.
Yes.
You just don't have the big horses. And it just felt like they could pass rush as good as we could.
That's right. Nebraska, zero sacks. I don't know what even TFLs they had. They couldn't have had more than two. So no havoc, no pressure. I mean, it was like, I don't know what you would even say. Like, they at least did this. It was nothing.
Defensively,
I mean,
nothing. Almost nothing.
You go through, there's been a lot of historically wow defensive performances over the course of the last 20 years. And again, this one, from a yardage standpoint, is the worst of them all.
Well, I try not to be too hard on anybody, just because, like, I know, like, these people work hard. Like these guys, they spend a lot of hours doing this. But you know, I thought that was the worst game plan that I'd seen from our defense. Like just in terms of like, here's the plan and here's our execution of it. And I was like, it felt like we, like you said, we got schooled. Like I felt like we got schooled, and it doesn't usually feel that much. It usually feels like, man, like sometimes they can, you know, it feels like we're getting pushed around or something. Or, you know, somebody makes great plays on us, but man, it felt like we were getting schooled.
So I interrupted you a little bit. Like, okay, you talk about like understanding your assignment and anticipating and making it happen quick. Like, are they capable of doing that? Are they not capable? What else are you seeing?
Like at this point, I mean, it's like, it's hard to be like, they're going to figure it out. But like, I don't know. I just, defenses that are good, like they're always thinking one step ahead. And they never want to make something hard, right? So like you usually have checks, right? Checks of like, you know, first out, first in, first up, or like, let's just, you know, you go into this gap, D lineman in front of me, so I don't have to, you know, cover some hard blocking scheme. Like, do the things to make it easy. Like you shouldn't do things that are hard. Like that was a lesson that, like, as you get older, you learn. I was actually talking to Stu Bradley about this. You know, Stu played years in the NFL, and he, you know, he said that was something that became very obvious when he got to the league, was like, look, don't do anything that's hard. If it's hard, don't do it. Like,
right,
do this because it's easy. Like, you should never have to do something that like your talent level can't do.
Right.
And so that's something that like I would love to see is like, hey, like let's have some checks. Let's have some things that we can just play fast, execute easily, that's not going to put our guys in a stressful, like, unwinnable situation. So yeah. I don't know. I mean, we don't know unless we're in those rooms.
I have no idea. And I'm not one of those people that pretends to know defensive schemes well enough to know.
I see
what I'm seeing.
I see defensive tackles. I see safeties and corners that don't look like they have a clear understanding of like, I know what I got right now.
It still seems like the communication issue is prevalent. It still seems like guys are scrambling as the ball's getting snapped. And the reality is, it's not just one. We're picking on the DBs, but the D line's getting blown up. The linebackers haven't played well. I think Henrich's injury, not that Henrich is, you know, the second coming of Ray Lewis coming back in this thing.
He's the guy that keeps people in the correct, you know,
I get checks. The sense he's the smartest guy. He's going to be able to communicate, get guys lined up.
Yes.
And with him not on the field, I think Ernest Hausman's got potential, but you were once Ernest Hausman. It's like, he's just not probably ready to he's doing the best he can given his age and what's being asked.
I mean, it's amazing. He's out there.
Right. Yeah. And so I think it's been a perfect storm of that. But the reality is nobody's playing well. Like the D-line, the linebackers, the secondary, it's like, you name it, they're not playing well.
Yeah, and I always, like, you know, I always am a little biased because I'm a linebacker, but like if your D-tackles are not playing well, it's just
it's a
hard year for you. If you just are like, if they're reaching those guys, and then you got to make the decision. Am I going to do my job or let us get gashed? That you're talking about, do your job. Like when people are getting reached, or when people like aren't making it easy for you, then there comes these gray areas, and these linebackers, you can tell right now, are like, they don't know where they're going because the D line
is getting pushed around and all of a sudden tackles on you at the second level
and constricting holes. So some, like, everybody's got a gap, right? But like sometimes, like when your team's not good enough, sometimes you're in your gap, but the hole is so big. Like, that was one thing I learned. Like in 07, we would have these gaping holes. And even like, I'm in my gap. And you're like, doesn't matter. Squeeze the gap. You know, the gap needs to disappear.
Because there were times last night.
Yeah, like where the gap's too big.
Well, the 170-yard run down to the one, I mean, that was an enormous hole, and he basically didn't get touched until he got down to the one.
Yeah.
And then you missed the first touchdown. I'm sure you saw the replay of it. Homeboy, it was a draw on 3rd and 10, and nobody touched him. So it's like, last night there were these gaping holes so with the defense, though, real quick, because here's something that as someone that has been a Chenander and defense defender over the years, It bothers me how the conversation sits right now when you write the book on the Frost era, because sometimes we're only, we have such short memories that we only, like the last memory is the one that we paint for everything.
Yeah.
And the defense over the course of the Frost era is the one thing that has gotten consistently better and improved every single year. And quite frankly, in my opinion, the defense is the only reason that Frost got a year five.
Yeah.
The unfortunate thing is that the defense now is probably the reason that Frost has gotten removed in year five. So there's a little bit of irony in there. Alanis Morissette needs to write a bit.
Isn't it ironic? Our defense was bad, don't you think?
It's like getting a year five because of the black shirts. It's getting fired because the black shirts suck. And isn't it ironic? That's what it is. Like, seriously, it was Alanis Morissette ironic part two 2022 is the black shirts. It's like the black shirts got them to this point and then ended it a little bit.
I'm trying to think of a funny Alanis Morissette line.
Oh, man, there's a
old man turned 98. Won the lottery, but died the next day.
That's what it is. Yeah. That's what it is. It's meeting the man of your dreams and meeting his beautiful wife. Like, but that's
10,000 spoons, but all you need is a knife.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what it is, though. There's the irony of the moment, because right now the prevailing thought is like it was the defense that screwed everything up. It's like technically that's true, but let me look into this camera right here and tell you one thing for everybody.
Yeah,
Scott Frost was fired, and the reason his era didn't work was because his offense blew it. His offense didn't work.
For too long, for too many years, it did not work.
It did not work.
Yeah.
This was supposed to be an offensive-led program. So I'm just saying, don't get it twisted.
It's funny. Like,
If we're going to play the blame game and we're handing out blame pie for people, I am heaping more blame pie on Frost and the offense and all of that than I am on the defense.
Yeah.
Now, if you would have combined last year's black shirts with this offense, like, you'd have a decent little team.
But that's it. We can never put it together. Like, we can never put together complete games. Complete games. Offense, defense, special teams for four quarters. Just doesn't happen.
Because special teams was fine last night.
Fine.
Offense was fine last night. Defense let down. There were times where the defense was great. The offense was okay. Special teams let them down. There were times, you know, like, it's just never, you're right. There's never been a whole three phases put together.
We need to become a team
right.
that plays complete games. Even if it's not sexy, doesn't matter. We got to play complete games. We got to have a strategy. We got to have a way of doing things that puts us in a position to win. And I seriously think it's O in defensive lines. And if you can run the ball, great. I mean, I'm not saying you have to be a running right. tech, but you gotta be in the trenches. You gotta be dominant. And we've been wishy-washy there. And I don't know, just play sound, tough football, be good in the trenches. Let's start from there.
You see Teddy Pino ass down, got hurt.
Oh yeah. He had a rough game too.
Man, he's
I don't want to call him out too much, but like a DB. Bull rushed him on a corner blitz. And I just wanted to be like, why don't you just pound that guy?
Teddy Pino. You know, your name is Teddy Pino ass down.
Teddy Pino ass down. You should pin his ass down.
Right. Live up to your name.
And I think, like, I don't know. It's like he's thinking about, like, just go kill him. Like, you're 6'9". Pound him.
Right.
Like, he'll get pounded.
What's weird is when he's gotten beat on rushes, you would think it was like guys like
speed rush
him, got outside.
Inside.
What it's been is he's gotten like blown up.
He gets like too like soft on these inside moves.
Well, he doesn't appear to me to now you would think there's just a non-negotiable level of just humanity that even if he doesn't have a good base that it would still be hard to move, but he doesn't seem like he's sturdy, if that makes sense. Like, he's really straight up and down.
I mean, Nick, but the thing that I don't, maybe he doesn't even realize, is that dude's 5'10", 170 pounds. Like, all you got to do is decide. You decide.
right.
You're going to pin his ass down. Right. Pin your ass down. Yeah. Like, it's just physics. Like, you'll smash him and there's nothing he can do. Like, maybe you'll miss. Right. He can juke you. But if you want to and you get him, if you touch him, there's nothing he can do.
Right.
And he kind of let this guy put an up and under and like push him. And
right. I was like, even the North Dakota guy fumble. Like, he's a little guy. Just like, he just blew up Teddy P.
Cause he's like, playing, he's thinking too much about his set and his form. And it's like, look, this guy is daring. If he's going to dare go in on you, you got to make him pay.
Right. Well, don't get blown back a couple of yards.
I remember the times I would pass rush, like the only hope you had against a big tackle was that they were going to miss you.
Right.
You know, or get off balance. Yeah. Like, but like, if you tried to bull rush and you just didn't have I didn't have near the size to bull rush a tackle, but like, you know, it's like, you really should feel like hitting a brick wall. You should be like, oh shit. You know,
yes.
Like, what are you going to do?
Right. But the offense though, I mean, it's unfortunate. Like, I mean, Casey Thompson is a pretty good player, man. And he was clutch last night. That 15 play drive, he made some big throws. He punches it in. He made some good runs. Like,
he looks tough. Right. He's smart. He makes good decisions under pressure. I mean,
like, in some ways he is, it's weird. Is he more overall talented than Martinez? If you're just like, maybe not, but
I like him more as a player.
I think I would rather have Casey Thompson as my quarterback than Adrian Martinez.
I know I would. I'm telling you right now, I've gotten three games of Casey and I've seen enough to go in the clutch. In his third down play is the difference. Like, Martinez does a lot of good things on first and second down between the 20s. Casey Thompson is good on third and long.
Right.
And throwing like the ball all over the field and in the clutch. I think he's good.
Yeah. I mean, he came through on the long 98 yard drive. And then even on the drive to give a bleak road a chance at a field goal, he did a good job.
I just feel like Martinez always struggled in those moments.
Martinez never even got like that. Just even the last little drive that got an opportunity for a field goal, Martinez never could do that.
Not if he didn't have like multiple minutes, like Casey Thompson, what, he had 30 seconds?
He had 30 seconds and two timeouts and marched him.
Marched
him. By the way, Trey Palmer, almost like trying to get an extra yard, almost like, ooh. Ooh, that was close.
Yeah, I was looking at it. I thought, could he have just turned and gotten up the field faster? But I also think, no, it wouldn't have made that much a difference because there almost wasn't enough time to run the quick out.
Right.
So, like, that's nitpicky, but I always just love the situations and, like, what's the right move? I think what Trey Palmer did was it wouldn't have made a difference if he would have just turned up, because in the end, it's like you get 2 or 3 yards. That guy shanked it. It wouldn't have mattered.
Well, and by the way, little note for the people that were watching on TV, what ended up being an important 5 seconds was, did you see when Clay Helton was letting the clock run down?
Oh God,
he
yeah.
tried to tell the ref, I want a timeout at one, and the ref immediately stopped the clock.
He heard timeout and he went, oh my God.
And so it ended up that 5 seconds, like if that field goal goes in and they lose an OT, if you're Clay Helton, you're like, oh my God, a ref not hearing me and saying I want a timeout at 1 second on the clock would have potentially lost in the game. It's either here nor there. But Casey Thompson is
Anthony Grant.
If you're looking for any optimism on this season that Nebraska might be able to make some noise, make things interesting, it's Casey Thompson, it's Anthony Grant. And then, you know, Palmer, Washington, get Vokolek back. Like, those, that picture's pretty good.
Yeah.
Even little AJ Allen.
He ran tough.
Yeah.
Like, It's funny that like we're seeing these running backs now make moves and break tackles, and we went, oh yeah, that's right. We didn't get to see that for 4 years.
For 4 years. You saw dashes of it with Maurice Washington. Every once in a while he would kind of, you know, like
house call,
yeah. Yeah, like AI cross a guy over. And but other than that, they've not, or the few times that Wandale would have to get called in to call, you know, to run the ball. Like, you finally are seeing two backs that actually, like, I mean, even there was one, Grant, talking about making a guy miss, Grant knocked a guy out of the game.
He's a good player. Like, he's three games in a row with over 100 yards. Yes. Like, this is something that, you know, like, I'm excited about our offense all of a sudden, but now the defense decides that, like, they're going to forget how to play.
It's frustrating.
It is.
It's really, really frustrating. All right,
are you ready for some wine?
Should we have some wine? Do you want to take a teeny weeny little break? So this will kind of wrap up this pod, whatever this pod was.
We recapped
Trev's press conference, and we'll wrap this up. We're going to pour some wine. We're going to get right into the wine pod here, where we're going to get more. And I got a bunch of, we didn't even really get into Frost and, like, why this didn't work.
Yeah.
So we got to get into some, into Frost. I'm going to kind of bare my soul with a few things. So we'll do that. And then we'll listen to a latest Morissette Ironic too. We'll do that. Okay.
What was your line?
I don't know.
The black shirts get you a year five. The black shirts cost you in year five. Isn't it ironic? Don't you think?
There you go, right?
Pretty good.
There we go. Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm not going to sing anymore. We're done.
Okay.
A Huda Media Production.